Mortis Maledictum is a cosmic dark fantasy story, and as such may contain content not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Now, enjoy the show.
Here you are again, prepared to turn the page. You know the risk and know the danger. Let us begin. Ephemera Cave had a nice ring to it. Out of all of the options listed on the map, that was the only one that practically leaped off the page. Jess folded the paper neatly back into the brochure it had come in and placed it in her purse. Colossal Cave had been more fun than she expected, but the whole follow the guide through the lit tunnels with handrails was a little too much for her adventurous spirit. Jess had cut her teeth in the Arizona Cave and now wanted something a little more rugged. Plane tickets were expensive, and Jess had to earn some more time off work anyway. She took the map and cut out the area surrounding Ephemera Cave in a small square and pinned it up to the wall of her little cubicle. There it sat, and as she stared at it every single day, the pennies slowly added up. 2 months later, Jess had the funds spare and booked her trip. Ephemera Cave had only been discovered 4 years ago, and after initially being sealed off to all but historians, the state finally let the public in to explore 6 months ago. She left that day with a little extra bounce in her step. There was a narrow gravel road leading away from the town. It wound off into the woods and down a small ravine. When Jess popped back out the far side of it, she made it far enough that the trees completely hid the town, not even a single mile behind her. It looked as though it were just her dusty sedan and a foggy morning were the only things in the entire world. The road twisted back in on itself and wound around the rolling hills that were the signature of Tennessee. Eventually, Jess slowed down and turned into a long drive just before her GPS lost reception. There was a half-built wood building and a freshly painted parking lot on the property, but that was about it. She stepped out of the car and made her way toward the building, which was little more than a shack. A man stepped out of it just before she got there.
Sorry, we're still in the construction phase. You'll have to wait out here. There's nails and roof and tiles all over the place in there.
I'm here for the cave tour.
Well, of course you are. Few people make it all the way out here by accident.
He chuckled at his own joke, but Jess simply stood there, expectantly, hands clasped in front of her.
The tour doesn't start for another hour.
That's all right. Is there somewhere I should wait?
The man scratched the back of his neck.
Not really. We're using the funds from the tours for construction, and as you can see, we aren't quite done with it all yet.
Jess smiled at the thought. This was as close to delving into uncharted depths as she had ever been. The prospect made the hairs on her neck stand on end. A real adventure. If it only took her away from the grey office walls for a weekend, it would be enough. The man in front of her was talking again, and Jess snapped back to the present.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
He looked a little peeved at having to repeat himself, but started again.
I was asking if you had your own caving gear or if you needed to borrow some of ours.
No. I didn't bring anything other than my flashlight.
The prospect of helmets and ropes, steel pins driven into rock to support her hanging over a bottomless pit in the depths of the earth, made her giddy. Jess had signed up for a cave tour, but she was hoping to get to explore unexplored tunnels and see formations before hundreds of thousands of others came in and ruined them. She wanted to go off the beaten path, even if the path itself was almost pristine. The man snapped her back out of her reverie again.
That's all right. You'll probably only need a flashlight for the tour anyway.
Jess leaned up against the trunk of a tree behind the ramshackle building. Here she waited for the rest of the tour to arrive. She could just see the mouth of Ephemera Cave yawning open at her through the underbrush. There was a slight rise in the ground, and large boulders looked like some giant had carelessly thrown them aside to search for the cave entrance. Someone had affixed a metal handrail to a few of the boulders to help people get up and over them. Jess thought this wasn't a good sign. If the tourists couldn't climb over a simple boulder, then how would they fare inside the cabin? Then she considered a worse idea. What if they had done the same inside the cave? Maybe the adventure she had come all the way for would end up being just another walk through tunnels on concrete ramps.
Oh, here it is. I found it, Henrietta. Didn't I tell you I found it?
An unfamiliar voice shouted over the sound of a slamming car door. Another member of the group had arrived. It was a woman's voice with a thick accent. The consonants slurred away and mushed her words into each other like a string of syllables without beginning or end.
I know my brother Tony would have loved to see it, rest his poor soul. You know it was the drink that did him in. But at least he went better than Aunt Jerry.
What any of those things had to do with the task at hand, Jess couldn't fathom. The woman's voice fell like an ice pick to the back of her skull. It carried past the trees and the building and the sounds of the wind through the leaves. It blocked all those other wonderful sounds out, and Jess could only hear the harsh, droning voice of the mystery woman.
I will not let her ruin this for me. Maybe she'll shut up when we get inside the cave.
Jess closed her eyes and tried to block out the annoying woman's voice, but taking away the visual stimulus just made the auditory assault even worse. Thankfully, a moment later, more cars pulled into the parking lot, and the rest of the group made their way towards the shack. Jess got up, brushed the leaves off her pants, and made her way over to the group.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Frank, and I'll be guiding you all on our ephemeral cave tour today. Now, there's another group in the cave right now, but they should be on their way back soon. Don't worry, because the cave is big enough for the both of us.
He smiled at the group, and Jess grimaced in reply. Frank spent the next 15 minutes explaining the rules in the cave, the route they planned on taking, and what to expect. It all sounded like the introductions Jess had heard at the cave in Arizona, and her heart sank a little.
The foot might be a bit slippery in certain areas, but there have been a lot of improvements made to make your journey easier.
Jess slumped her shoulders even lower. This wasn't turning out to be anything like what she had expected.
Excuse me. I have some problems walking a long way on account of my ingrown toenail. Will there be places where I can take a break in the cave?
Frank made a face that crossed the boundary between surprise and disgust.
Yes, ma'am. There are benches in two locations in the cave where we have set up a display for our guests. I will also stop the tour at certain points to discuss some of the interesting history of the cave. That should give you time to catch up if you fall behind.
That's good, then. Miss Henrietta here said to me, she said, Margie, you old bat, you aren't going to make the trek through the new cave. But I told her I'd do it, and she had to come with me here for proof.
Jess turned her nose up at the idea someone would book a cave tour if they didn't have the physical ability to complete it. She knew she was being judgmental, but at that very moment, she didn't care. Finally, after more asinine questions, the loud, oversharing woman turned to her friend and changed the subject. She never stopped talking. She just carried on right over the top of Frank's last-minute preparatory speech. He graciously continued to address the other guests crowding around him, all readying themselves for the tour. Jess tightened her shoelaces and clicked on her flashlight. Jess followed the crowd over the boulders and towards the mouth of the cave. There, Frank pulled out a key and turned the lock on the metal gate blocking the entrance.
We don't want any critters wandering in and surprising you all in the dark, now do we?
He said, affected a wolfish grin, and clicked his headlight on. The group clambered over the lip and into the twilight. As Jess passed across the threshold, she felt the familiar tingle of excitement of dropping into the unknown. And she let some of her earlier frustrations die away. Jess hovered about midway through the group. She could hear the oohs and ahs from those ahead of her, and the grumbling of those still outside. There was no clear path, but someone had moved several tons of boulders to one side of the antechamber, leaving a dusty emptiness sloping away into the dark. Jess kept her own flashlight off for now, preferring to rely on the others and the little remaining ambient light to guide her down to the cave's floor. The feeling was elation and trepidation, rolled up together and baked deep in Jess's heart. She thrived on that feeling, but it didn't last long.
I know where to put my feet. If you're so good at this, get down here already. Oh, that's right. You can't do it either. It isn't as if we're in our 40s anymore.
Looking back at the pair stumbling their way down into the cave, Jess figured they wouldn't have done well in their 20s, let alone their 40s. The pair were overweight with no coordination, and varicose veins winding their way up their legs like blue tendrils. Jess tried to ignore them, but Margie hadn't closed her mouth since she arrived, or as Jess figured, since birth. Once the group made their way to the level floor of the cave's entrance room, Frank motioned for everyone to gather around him.
You have just walked into the first stage of the tour. A Native American tribe closed this room. It had been closed up hundreds of years ago until we found it again. Can anyone tell me which tribe it was?
No one moved or spoke up. Margie and Henrietta continued their unrelated conversation in the back of the group.
It was the Mississippians. They used caves like this one quite a bit for anything from getting out of the bad weather to spiritual journeys.
Jess moved closer to hear Frank over the droning background noise of the two old ladies in the back.
Now y'all will be able to see some of their cave paintings as we move around the edge of this room. Since there is natural light here, the Native Americans used it the most. As we go further in, the cave paintings become fewer and more...
When Frank found the right words, Jess couldn't catch them over the banshee shouting about her sore feet. They made their way around the room, looking at different indigenous paintings and discussing their potential meanings. This gave the group time for their eyes to acclimate to the gloom and the deeper dark ahead. It also gave Jess a chance to hang back from them to get a closer look at not one or two, but the five branching tunnels leading off the main room. Three of them looked well-traveled based off the dusty footprints, but the other two held few tread marks. Instead, there were scuff marks in the dirt, as though someone had dragged something away, deeper in.
What goes that way?
Those tunnels haven't been fully mapped out yet. There's an archaeological and geological team that's going over them. They should be open by next summer, or so they tell me.
He tried to resume his speech, but Jess spoke over him.
Is the team down that way now?
Yes. Yes, the team comes and goes as they need to. They have their own keys to the grate. Now we really must push on with the tour. We need to start down the tunnels before the other tour gets here. I don't want anyone getting mixed up and turned around, am I right?
There was a nervous energy to it. Jess couldn't place if maybe he misplaced a guest before, or if it was something else entirely. Out of the primary hub, the dust and debris slowly gave way to the slick floor of a live cave. Stalagmites replaced boulders, and the passages got narrower.
Did you know Leonard? He used to go down to the corner drugstore and buy those little candies for us when we were small. He's buried in the cemetery down the road from my house. Nobody ever takes care of his grave. Sad it is. But I'm not going to do it with my arthritis and all. It's not like he bought me a car. It was only candy. I do have a heart, but I have to make sure it keeps beating is all.
And it goes on. Does she even stop to breathe?
Despite the constant nagging behind her, Jess got what she wanted. Ephemera Cave was new, and the state had barely built anything yet. There were few handrails, almost no footing felt sure, and except for the two benches Frank had mentioned up above, there were no other signs of modern convenience. Walking through some of the larger rooms, Frank stopped the tour to talk about cavernous structures or point out more native artwork on the walls and ceiling. Jess thought it was a wonder that people from so long ago took paints as deep as they did into the cave, and all the while carrying torches. If those torches ever went out, it would have been almost impossible to make it back to the surface through all the branching tunnels.
Why did the Mississippians come this far in?
That is a great question. We don't rightly know for sure, but scholars and historians who have studied their culture think that it was for religious reasons. You see, the Mississippians believe that there are three worlds. We live and exist in the middle world. The sky is the upper world, and underground is the lower world. The thing is, there are places and times when those worlds flip over and you can cross between them. Historians think this may have been one of those places.
You mean they think the natives believed this was one of those places?
Sure. The other tour should be about out by now. There's no one else in this part of the cave but us. What do y'all say about a little experiment, hmm?
Everyone in the group nodded or shrugged, as if it was scripted. They had all come for the same reason Jess had. They wanted to see something new and exciting.
Great. Let's see what it would feel like, just for a minute, if we were like the ancient natives down here in the dark. Let's pretend we let our last torch go out. All together on three, we'll turn our flashlights off. We are deep enough into the cave no surface light can reach us, and the other two is long gone. Even the science team is in a different wing. We will be completely alone in the dark.
Jess liked the sound of that. She hadn't even bothered to use her flashlight the whole time, since there were so many others about shining light in the walls, the ceiling, the floor ahead of them. Everyone else was nodding, albeit with a slight more nervousness in their movement. One or two more were even checking their wrist straps as though they feared dropping their light the second it went off.
Here we go. Everyone ready? 3, 2, 1.
And just like that, Jess was alone in the dark. She couldn't see anyone else standing next to her. She couldn't even see her hand in front of her. There was a soft clopping noise off to her left, like someone shuffling their feet back and forth over the slick ground. The next second, someone coughed, and then Jess heard the murmurs. In the absence of light, her ears were taking over as a primary sense. She could tell the conversation was in the distance, and she wouldn't have been able to hear it at all if she wasn't listening for it. Even still, she couldn't make out the words over the shuffling feet. At least Margie and Henrietta had finally shut up. Frank waited another 10 seconds, and then clicked his light back on. Jess held her hand up to shield her eyes from it, then all others clicked their lights on, and mercifully pointed them at the ground.
How did everyone like that?
That was fun,
a young woman said from next to Frank's elbow. Her expression did not match her words, and Jess could tell the dark had freaked her out. People always think being alone in the dark is what's scary, but that's only because they don't want to admit the truth to themselves. The thought that really scares them is not being alone in the dark.
I'm just glad those two harpies stopped talking for 2 fucking seconds.
Sporadic laughter echoed off the walls of the cavern, and Jess looked around to see what Margie and Henrietta thought of the comment. They weren't there. Jess wasn't the only one to notice. In less than 5 seconds, the rest of the formerly calm and entertained group became frantic. It wasn't even that the pair had disappeared. That wasn't the bad part. It was that their flashlights were still there, laying in puddles of blood, and no one had seen or heard it happen. A tremor of fear shot through the group.
The genuine fear is not being alone in the dark.
They weren't alone. The guide's words about the lower world sprang back into Jess's mind, and she pulled her own light out of her pocket. She clicked it on and shined the beam down the passage behind where the two pools of blood now sat. Jess couldn't see the back of the tunnel, it did earlier. It didn't make sense. She knew there was a slight right turn, and then a small drop-off going around a section of denser rock. She should be able to see it, but it was as though a curtain of inky blackness had drawn shut between her and the tunnel. Shadows danced across the intersecting beams of the group's flashlights. Then, as if called forward, the sharp edge of darkness surged towards the group. Claw-like shapes lashed out at the beams of light.
What the hell, man?
Someone called out in surprise. Several others echoed their own shock.
What's going on?
Jess asked, directing the question at Frank, but the guide's eyes looked as wide and wild as the rest of them. He shook his head in a quick staccato, without ever turning it fully from the writhing darkness.
The shifts. They were right. Oh God, they were right.
We've got to get out of here. I know the way out.
One woman called.
No. We need to follow the guide.
Another called.
Screw the guide. Let's get out of here.
Said a third person.
What about those two?
This question finally seemed to break into Frank's trance-like shock.
We can't do anything for them now. I'll get you all out of here, and then we can call the police. This way, come on.
Everyone rushed towards the tunnel, except Jess. She hesitated for an instant, looking at the pools of blood where the 12 ladies had once stood. Guilt rooted her to the spot. Guilt over how judgmental she'd been about them. Frank, the whole experience. Now that something terrifying was really happening, it wasn't fun anymore. Jess's hesitation, her guilt, was what saved her in the end. As the group moved to the tunnel entrance, they took their flashlight beams off the writhing mass of dark claws and tendrils. They pointed their lights up ahead to help them navigate where they were going. As the power of the light weakened against the darkness like a living thing, it pounced on the people running away. Like a wave, the curtain of black death surged around Jess and turned the people closest to the tunnel entrance into pools of blood and floating specks of ash. There wasn't a scream or cry from the first three it devoured, just a soft sigh of the motes of ash floating down to dissolve in the blood on the ground. By the time the claws reached the fourth victim, those remaining realized what was happening. They screamed and fled down the tunnel at dead sprints, their lights bouncing wildly on the walls as they bobbed in their hands, but always pointing forward and never back. Never where the danger was. Jess stood motionless and alone in the middle of the cavern, sweat beaded on her face. The soft beam of her small light shook with a tremor in her hand. It made the shadows of the stalagmites dance on the far wall. There were no more claws in this room. There was no more living darkness. But the inky black curtain remained in the far tunnel. It slowly pulsed back and forth, slowly inching nearer the main room. Whatever was inside that darkness wasn't here anymore. It was off hunting, but the dark itself still crept its way closer. In a slow, deliberate motion, Jess turned and moved towards the tunnel where Frank had pointed. She stole down it, moving as quickly as she could while ensuring her steps were utterly silent. She noticed two more pools of ash and blood, and then Frank's body. The monster in the dark hadn't killed him. He had just slipped and impaled himself on a stalagmite in his haste to escape. This was a newly opened cave, and it wasn't safe yet. She moved onward without even a pause. There wasn't any guilt nagging at her about Frank's death. It wasn't an emotion she could entertain now. The passages twisted and turned, always winding upwards. Occasionally, Jess would step out into a larger room where water had dissolved the rock, leaving a larger void behind. She preferred the tunnels, because even with the tighter passages, she could see what was coming ahead of her. In the large open rooms, the clawed monster could be lurking behind any column or down any side tunnel. Jess ran across the small, bloody pools of more victims as she moved. Frank had died early on, and the ephemera cave was a labyrinth. She knew she was lost, and could only imagine where the others were. She was alone with the dead, but Jess guessed that as long as she moved upward every chance she got, eventually she would make it back to the dusty entrance room for her last climb to safety. The story of the three worlds raced through her mind as she wound her way through the cavern, following the beam of her flashlight. It was small and didn't have the kind of battery life for an extended time in the dark. She thought she had changed the batteries out before coming to the cave, but as the glow slowly decreased, Jess started to panic. Rounding a corner into another room, Jess stopped cold. The darkness had already infected the room, and of the three branching tunnels away, only one was still open. It was not unguarded, however, and the shadow flickered around the shrinking beam of Jess's flashlight. She didn't wait for it to charge her. Jess turned and raced back down the passage she had come from. In the room behind her, she heard not a whisper of noise, but felt the hairs on her neck raise. It was chasing her, silent, in the dark. The silence didn't keep for long. Jess made it back to the previous room, and then picked the closest tunnel she hadn't tried, and ran into one of the young men from the tour. He yelped when he saw her, and fell back. Jess jumped clean over his prone form, and didn't look back when she heard the hiss and sigh. Counting the pools of blood and bodies wasn't a healthy way to deal with the fear, but Jess couldn't help herself. Mentally, she added one more tick mark to her ongoing tally. Frank had done a head count right before they all climbed over the boulders and entered the cave, and by Jess's best guess, there are more bodies than tourists in here.
I guess the other group never made it out.
Jess gritted her teeth and kept running. There was no point in trying to hide anymore. Her flashlight wouldn't keep up the wan light for much longer, and with a monster straight out of a Native American underworld chasing her, Jess wasn't about to slow down. There was no more stealth, just a gamble that she could find the right passage out before the curtains of inky darkness closed her in, or the clawed shadow caught up with her. The turning passage tightened suddenly, and Jess had to scramble through a small gap on her hands and knees. She didn't remember going this way on the way in. She had somehow made it into one of the other branches of the cave system. On the other side of the gap, there was a large echoing room, free of stalagmites, and in the center, there was a large metal box. She must have made it to the area where the scientists were studying the Mississippi Tribal Cave artwork. The box was open, and there were many strange devices Jess couldn't place. They were probably all very important and exacting for their purpose, but the one thing she had prayed for wasn't there. The box held no spare flashlights and no batteries. Her own light had turned from a bright white to a dull yellowish glow now, and only illuminated about 10 feet ahead of her. As she watched, the light fell faster and faster. It didn't make sense. Jess knew there should be at least another half hour on its life. She wasn't sure how long she'd been down there, but it just felt off. She couldn't have completely drained it already. Then she shone the small light around in a circle around the room, fear trickling down her spine. The light wasn't failing. The darkness. The curtain of inky blackness surrounding her. It had trapped her. It would pull her into the lower world, and there wasn't anything she could do about it. It was close now, and Jess scrambled into the center of the room. She looked for a way out, but there wasn't one. In the last instant, she laughed. At least the claws never caught her. Then the pools of darkness flowed over her and pulled her down into the lower world. Jess blinked and found she could see. She wasn't in the cave anymore, but on a flat plain of grey mist. Her eyes adjusted to her surroundings. The beam of her light was stronger here. Jess waved it around, looking for some landmark or some way back. The only thing she saw in every direction made her stomach drop. Millions of the clawed creatures, flickering shadows in their own right, encircled her and slowly moved in.
Well, Dark Valiants, I hope you liked this episode. If you want to know what happens next, I guess you'll just have to stick around, won't you? Thank you for listening. If you're a fan and want to connect with us and other listeners of the show, join our community Discord server. And if you want to listen to a library of exclusive episodes, you can show your support by joining our Patreon. The links are in the description.